What kind of a future do you anticipate for the world? In the United States today, there are a lot of different answers to this question. And these different answers both signify and reinforce different ways of living in the world. Some, not all, but some, very conservative Christians, for example, envision a future in which the world as we know it will end very soon. They foresee a world increasingly swamped by natural disasters, pandemics, and wars. As predicted in their reading of biblical prophecy, at some point in all this mayhem, the rapture will happen, and at that moment the elect, those who truly believe, will be lifted up in heavenly bliss while the rest of us are left behind in an earth that is a hellhole. Now, in this viewpoint, one of the significant signs that this glorious end is coming near is escalating tension and war in the Middle East. So this is where the embers that hasten the rapture and the second coming of Christ will burst into a conflagration. If you believe in this view of the future, I don't think it's a stretch to imagine that escalating conflict in the Middle East then is, in some ways, a good thing. This may be why some who hold this viewpoint encourage Israel to be very aggressive in its policy. So we have these strange political bedfellows of ultra-nationalist Israeli Jews politically allied with ultra-conservative Christians whose religion has had more than its share of anti-Semitism. How you view the future impacts how you act in the here and now. On the other end of the ideological spectrum are those who look at the future and see a world that has been catastrophically damaged by human impact, particularly over these last 400 years of industrial development. They foresee a future characterized by more severe weather, failing crops, coastal lands swamped by water, and growing strife among the world's human beings as the natural resources we crave become scarcer. If you're in this group and you think that at least there's a chance we haven't passed that tipping point, you'll likely be committed to reducing dramatically the human consumption that is so endangering to our planet. Again, how you view the future impacts how you act today. So interestingly, these two futures, the one on the one hand, envisioned by those who foresee Armageddon and the accompanied escape of the elect and the rapture, and on the other hand, those who view that we're on the brink of an environmental apocalypse, these in some ways really are not very different visions of what the future might look like. Unless you're one of the few lifted up in the rapture, and let's be clear, no one in this room is probably in that group. Then either way, either vision, things are pretty bleak. Neither of these futures is something you want to write home about. Now, I don't otherwise mean to equate these two views of the future. The first viewpoint to me is the result of truly a profound misreading of Jewish and Christian scriptures. The second viewpoint is, unfortunately, a highly plausible possibility given the warming of the planet that we've already seen and the, so far, utter failure of the world to deal with this. Combine this with other pressures on our planet posed by the ever-increasing human population, and the future could indeed be very challenging. Well, all this has made me reflect on what is the prevalent view in the United States today of the world's future. Well, I think you can choose from the never-ending stream of dystopia movies that Hollywood keeps churning out, and you'll get a picture of what that probably is. Right now, this afternoon, instead of watching the Packers, if you want to go over to the Marcus East Cinema, you could see Dread 3D. This movie envisions a future in which the United States is an irradiated wasteland. This huge metropolis from Boston to Washington, D.C. is ruled by criminals. Or you could go to the same theater and see Resident Evil Retribution. In this movie, the Umbrella Corporation's deadly T-virus continues to ravage the Earth. This lovely disease transforms people into flesh-eating zombies. Or, at the same theater, you can see The Dark Knight Rises, the dramatic conclusion of the franchise that I think maybe more than any other has painted the most powerfully bleak picture of our very challenging future. But if you don't want to go to the theater this afternoon, this week you could sit down at home and watch the hit new TV show, Revolution, in which the world experiences this unknown phenomenon that disables all the electricity in a world suddenly without technology, governments collapse, militias and warlords fill the void. Again, not a very pretty picture. Or you could just read a book. One member of our fellowship, who is a children and teens librarian in the area, wrote that she just can't believe the number of apocalyptic themed books that are out for teens and young adults. So in her library, she made a book list titled, "If You Like the Hunger Games, ... then read this." And she had 3 pages of other books. And then there's video games, which give you a chance to actually feel what it might be like to live in a post-apocalyptic world. So what, I wonder, is the impact of these images of our future bombarding teens and young adults everywhere they look? What is the impact of this? I have to believe that it exacts a spiritual and a psychic toll. So these powerful and negative views of the future may explain why now we're talking about the 2012 phenomenon. This phenomenon brings together a range of predictions of some sort of cataclysmic transformative event in the world, focusing on December 21st, 2012. Some link this particular date to the end of this cycle of the Mayan calendar. They argue that this is the end of this 5,125-year Mayan calendar cycle. Now, not everyone interprets the end of the Mayan calendar negatively. While some picture the kind of conflagrations that you can go see at the movie theater, others see it more as a metaphorical turning point, maybe even a point of positive transformation. One such person in the fellowship is Heather Wesley. And as I mentioned earlier, she and her husband Todd purchased a sermon topic, and this is the one. She asked me to give my thoughts about the end time. So, Heather explained to me that even if you put stock in this idea of December 21st being a transformative day or event, the question is, what does it mean? Does it mean the annihilation of the planet? Or does it mean maybe something less cataclysmic, maybe even something positive? Heather, a pagan Unitarian Universalist, characterizes the average pagan as having a moderate, middle-of-the-road expectation of what this means, and she puts herself in that camp. She believes that the end of the Mayan calendar cycle marks a fundamental change in humanity. She interprets the end of this cycle to signify the end of the age of Pisces, this period where Christianity and the other monotheistic faiths dominated the world. In the dawning age of Aquarius, yep, you can hear that song, right? Yep, humanity will be governed by different values. Heather and others anticipate the dawning of an age that will be far more nature-centered, earth-centered. There will also be more individualism, more appreciation of diversity and less enforced conformity. At the same time, there will be a greater emphasis on human connection and community. I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty good to me. So pictures of what the end of the Mayan cycle, calendar cycle, might look like vary from the horrific to potentially pretty wonderful. The vision of the future, I guess, is always in the eye of the beholder. And we ever-diverse human beings can see very different things when we peer ahead into the future. Maybe more than anything, the future is sort of a kind of Rorschach test for us. And here's another example of this diversity of viewpoint. I put out the query on my fan page on Facebook this week about, well, how do you see the future? And a few people anticipated the kind of future in some ways that the TV show Revolution anticipates. But it's got a very different twist to it. What they see is a future less dependent on technology, like in Revolution, but rather than in a breakdown of society with militias calling the shots, what they see with less technology is a world that gets back to nature, that slows down, that appreciates the little things, that connects face to face, neighbors, families, friends. So what kind of a future do you anticipate? As I ponder my own anticipation of the future, I found myself this week going back to a local event that took place a couple of weeks ago. And that event was the 15th anniversary celebration of the GLBT partnership. So I was one of the folks who sat around the table 15 years ago and talked about how our community might better support high school youth who identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, questioning, or queer. We knew two things about this population. One, that they do exist in the Fox cities, of course, and everywhere else. And two, that statistics tell us that this is a population that is dramatically at higher risk for mental health issues, including depression and suicide, higher drug abuse, being victimized by harassment, bullying, and violence, and running away from or being kicked out of homes. Given this, we felt like we got to do something as a community, and what we settled on was offering a weekly support group for this age group. None of us knew 15 years ago how this group would unfold. If someone had told me 15 years ago that there would be a celebration of the 15th anniversary that would be a really big deal in the community, attended not just by alumni of the group and some of the supporters of the group, but by the mayor of Appleton and the police chief of Appleton and the Appleton superintendent of schools, I would have been incredulous. Especially because in the early days of the partnership, it was a highly secretive group. Its meetings were not public. A youth who found out about it and might have been interested in attending had to call a hotline and be interviewed so that we could determine that this youth had good intentions and not ill intentions for the group. That level of secrecy and security made sense at the time, but happily stopped making sense shortly after the group's founding. The GLBT partnership has come out of the closet and now exists in a public, proud way. It is an out program now. 15 years ago, I would not have imagined that this partnership would meet every single Tuesday night, 52 nights, 52 weeks a year, for 15 years, and that over 2,000 youth would be served by it. I did not foresee this. I did also not foresee that we might, as a society, actually make some progress on the issue of LGBTQ liberation. I did not foresee 15 years ago that some states would have marriage equality. We have a long way to go, of course. But I'll be honest, we've come further in these 15 years than I would have thought. But though I was off the mark in a lot of specific ways when I looked ahead 15 years, what's also true is that a more general vision of the future guided me in getting on board with founding this partnership. What kind of a future do I anticipate? I anticipate a future where everyone is included for who they are. I anticipate a future where everyone is encouraged to have a healthy mind, body, and spirit. I anticipate a future where there is no poverty, where there is good health care access for everyone and quality education for everyone. I anticipate a future where we have figured out how to get along, so that we have no more crime or war. I anticipate a future where we have figured out how to stop polluting and killing our planet. Having a program in the Fox cities that supports and values LGBTQ youth is one small but significant way I have worked to try to realize this future. It helped motivate me to be part of this partnership. So, do I believe that this rosy picture I just painted will automatically come true? No, not automatically. Not just because I imagine it. Not just because I pray for it. Not just because I think some God's going to come down and magically make it happen. I believe that a future, though marked by justice and love, can happen. But only if I and a whole lot of us dig in and do the work of trying to make it happen. And if we do that, I think our future can be bright. I realize it will not happen quickly. Maybe it won't happen at all. Given my vast imperfections, of which I'm very aware, and the imperfections of all of us, I don't expect this beautiful world to break out tomorrow or on December 21st or in my lifetime necessarily. But I think there's at least a chance that we can make some progress. And the only way, again, to do that is to dig in and do some good work. So helping to dream up this partnership is one way I've tried to do my part. In this and in all the justice work I do, my anticipation of a better future motivates me to do the work, even as I acknowledge that it might not turn out the way I see it and that it's a long road. My anticipation does help me get the work done. And I think if the world I envisioned, instead of looking like a just and more peaceful place, if the world I envisioned instead looked like Dread 3D or Resident Evil or Revolution or the Batman franchise, I don't know that I'd be doing the work, honestly. So when I think about the future, I envision myself standing on a beach at night alone, like Walt Whitman, looking up at the stars and realizing that, like it or not, everything, everyone, we're all in this together. All spheres, all distances, all inanimate and living bodies, all souls, all nations, all colors, all barbarisms, civilizations, languages, all lives and deaths, all the past, present, and future, all tied together in what Martin Luther King Jr. called this inescapable single garment of destiny. For better, for worse, this is the inescapable truth. So what will I do with my small, but like all of us, nonetheless consequential life to help this future happen?